Comic Hour with your hosts, Andrew Glauner
and Chris Ramos.
Tonight, we review Michael Moorcock's Elric. And we are reviewing specifically the box set that recently came out this year as the four graphic novel set.
From Titan Comics.
From Titan Comics, which is a beautiful set. These were like published individually within about the last 6 years, like 2014 to the
as separate issues, or were they like the hardcovers? Well, not hardcovers.
I think they were collected together. I can't confirm all those facts.
Sort of mini graphic novels, a little bit, because each story is there's like four parts to this story.
Yes, absolutely. So it was really cool to review this set because what got me into this was just how fantasy based this looked. It looked a little different, but familiar with the whole, we're all very immersed in like D&D culture and fantasy settings and things like that. So it's like, oh, this looks cool. I want to check this out. I want to know more about
it. Well, and sometimes like the hype of certain books just catches on for some reason. It's just sort of like this random wildfire. And I think this kind of came off of the hype from Conan the Barbarian. They started building that into omnis and collected editions. Marvel used to have Conan for a long time.
Absolutely.
And so now it's kind of like,
and now Titan owns Conan the Barbarian now.
Yeah.
So that was a huge development in the collected editions.
Well, and most of these too, like, I mean, Conan, especially Elric exclusively, you know, 70s, 1980s. You know, you look at their reissuing He-Man, their rebranding issuing Transformers. I mean, this to fantasy readers, to fantasy fiction novelists, Elric of Melbourne is one of the premier fantasy novels that predates most of what you would think of. I mean,
absolutely.
There was Lord of the Rings. There was a lot of sci-fi, a lot of fantasy. And then along came D&D much later. So it's the same, you know.
Yeah.
That's your writing on
and
that.
And I guess, was this the first time reading or anything about Elric? Or did you encounter the novels first?
So I read the novels when I was younger. And the novels actually, so Michael Moorcock wrote the Elric saga. And he wrote that in like the 70s.
Yeah, I think the first one came out in 61.
Oh, gosh. Okay, 60s. Well, there's a lot of books.
Yeah, The Dreaming City was 1961.
Okay, so I looked up which one I read and I recognized the cover.
Okay.
I was just like, that's the one I read.
Yeah.
Like, that's the cover. But it's an old school cover and it's kind of like almost like a Art Deco kind of cover of Elric holding the black sword.
Okay.
And when I was younger, I used to stop at a bookstore in my town. I'd walk home and I'd stop at this bookstore and they had a room that was all used books. The whole was all used bookstore. One room was exclusively sci-fi and fantasy. So I would just literally sit in there and I didn't really have the money to just buy every book that I liked. So I just sat there and just read a little bit here, read a little bit there, kind of flipped through books, read the backs of books. I mean, this was when everything was just paperbacks all the
right.
time. You know? So even though it was like a used bookstore, and I'm sure each paperback was like a dollar or two, I was still like, I don't have money for this. So I do remember getting Elric as a oversized, like a what they call a mass market paperback.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a bigger paperback novel. And I read that just as a warning, not to go from novel to comic book, but
there's a beginning.
Just as a warning, Elric is written like an Isaac Asimov novel or like some other really, really heavy, like Dune or something. I mean,
sure,
it's
dense.
A lot. It's dense. It's a lot. It's a whole world. It's all different people. It's gods and goddesses and religions.
Sure. And even for this specific series, this was like a mature read.
So then what they did was they tried to translate these giant novels and this giant world into a comic book setting. And they've done the same thing for Dune. Like Dune is now in the graphic novel setting. And you have to remember when you take a novel that's 1,000 pages and you distill it down into like a graphic novel,
right?
Comic. You're missing a lot of that, you know, dialogue.
Sure.
But yeah, I read the first novel. I just don't remember if I read beyond that. Like I read the first one, which was pretty encompassing and very good. I know Michael Moorcock has written many novels beyond that. And so I just didn't follow it as much as I followed like Dune or something else.
Okay. And I mean, this isn't the first time like Michael Moorcock's comics even the Elric series has been adapted into comic book form. This was just like the latest additions that even like Moorcock himself, like, hey, the art really speaks well. Mm-hmm. The core of the story really translates to what I was trying to accomplish and illustrate through his words and storytelling. So I think they were super proud of that accomplishment. They really worked with him on this project. So that was really cool to see like your vision come to life.
Yeah. And I think what the comic did really well right at the beginning, just right out of the gate, is they set up this Melbourne society.
Yes.
As like thousands and thousands of years into what you would consider a top chaos society. You know, like right away, it's like these people,
they're very established.
Yes. It's like they're very dominating. Mm-hmm. And they're sort of ruling class, like what you would consider their kings and queens or emperors or however you want to spin it.
Sure.
It kind of brings a lot of like Game of Thrones, things.
Absolutely.
Of like these people have been in power for thousands of years and there's nothing really that they can do anymore other than just war and battle.
Yeah,
and
like, that's where they get their kicks.
Yeah, it's like at that point, where do you get your kicks? You just get it from just torturing and enslaving and taking over.
Yes, just to give a brief explanation, like the slightest brief explanation of what is Elric of Melbourne. Elric is kind of this ruler of the kingdom of Melbourne.
He's like the newest ruler.
He's the newest ruler. And he is trying to manage his throne, manage his kingdom. And there's always somebody trying to usurp them or trying to take over. How do they expand their kingdom? How do they rule their people? And there's always somebody that wants to topple over or like the gods that they worship.
Well, they're very much like a dominating culture.
Yes.
And they just have always lived in war and they've always lived in battle. And so when Elric was born, mm-hmm. he was born like weak.
Yes.
He's an albino.
Yeah.
And he's just, he's not so bloodthirsty mm-hmm. as everybody else.
Yes. As his fellow kingdom people in his kingdom, his party. Yeah.
And so his kingdom right away, including his father, mm-hmm. was like, he's weak and he can't continue our lineage of like destruction.
Yes.
So he doesn't necessarily have the total support of his whole family, including his cousins.
He's
and
not,
everything.
Yeah. And he's not as evil. He's not as evil. We can't say he's heroic. We can say he's the slightest bit of heroic. Like, like if you pinch your fingers and you put them, like you could see the smallest violin.
In the 60s, Michael Moorcock came up with like the anti-hero.
Yes. He's very much an edgelord. Like his society is like necromancers and dark rulers and things like that. And so he helps manage those people. And there's like dragons and dark gods and things like that. So it's very much a kingdom of evil within the society. And he is the most heroic of all the evil people.
Yeah, which is slightly heroic.
So you're like, wow. All right. So trying to put your mindset into that it's a little off-putting at first.
Yeah.
But once you immerse into what he's trying to explain, this epic saga, it really kind of pulls you in and tries to give some character development.
I do want to say that the writers and the artists, right off the bat, they do establish a pretty convoluted society. And they manage to put it down into a few pages to make it understandable.
Absolutely.
Which is cool. Like, okay, you guys accomplished that, right?
Yeah.
And then beyond that, I think you get the idea that this society does not fit the new ruler, Elric.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you do if you are like a society of bloodthirsty vampires? Yeah,
you're
almost
exactly. You're like the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, you're like this isn't what I want to continue. So, mm-hmm. so he's trying to, you know, on one hand, break everyone of their traditions.
Yes.
But then on the other, he wants to like live his own life and not just be at this, you know, there, it, you kind of run into the problem too, that there's no one else left to fight.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's like when you take over the world, mm-hmm. now what? Yeah. Now what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so Helleric is just trying to figure out how to navigate that life until like his, I think it's his cousin or his brother or something like that, tries to absurd him. And that's the, like that shakeup of the status quo.
Yeah. It's his cousin. That's, yeah. And that's kind of like a, almost
kind of a trope. A
yeah. bit. I was going to say like Aquaman has his distant relative that wants to take over. I mean, everyone always has this like,
I can do it better.
Yeah, this mean cousin who is like, I want the throne.
And yeah, so that's kind of where it starts. And, you know, it's just things begin to unravel for Elric, who had it pretty comfortable. And then it was just like, it just begins to just unravel before him. And he can't get his footing quite yet. And then he kind of figures out, hey, maybe I have to go seek aid outside the kingdom. And things like that. He hasn't done a ton of that. He's worshipped other gods, but those gods may not support him in the same way he's thinking. And it's just this very robust world as the more you travel outside the kingdom. I appreciated that.
Yeah, that's true. So like their culture, their society, thousands of generations ago gave their life to the Lords of Chaos.
Yes.
And they just constantly mention that they are mm-hmm. bound to the Lords of Chaos. which are gods.
Yes.
And you know, I'm always like a reader, even in regular books and comics and everything else, when they say, hey, there's gods that overrule us or there's gods that we pray to, you never usually, I mean sometimes you don't usually see the gods.
Right.
You know, you just sort of get the idea that they're like this pantheon and that's part of their culture.
Sure.
Well, in these books and in these comics, the gods do appear and they do control things. And as Elric realizes that he has somewhat of a power over them, sort of.
Yeah.
Because he has powerful magic.
Right? Yeah. He has this like direct, since he was the head of this kingdom, like those Lords of Chaos, those gods of chaos, they directly like respond to him. Because he was that ruler and that figurehead. So we're like,
he could call on them.
He can call on them because his father and his father before him and all that, they all worship the same people. So it's like, all right, here's your same traditions and whatnot. So when he starts breaking from those traditions, they're like, what you doing, man? Yeah. We didn't sign up for that.
They're like, you're supposed to be sacrificing people.
Right. So he does like have to make sacrifices, but he does them very reluctantly. And like when he goes into battle, he's like, oh, I didn't mean for all these, like half my kingdom or whatever, my traveling party to die on this trip, but it did.
Yeah. And you get the idea too, that like, there's sort of this internal strife. So he doesn't just have the throne, you know, he's like making plays and politics for the throne.
Mm-hmm.
And you could almost sort of pick out that he's not going to win this battle, you know, like he's not a very good politician.
No.
Like a cutthroat politician.
No, he's not really interested in the politics.
Yeah, and he doesn't really care about the throne. So I think, you know, if we go back to like when this was written, it was kind of neat that, you know, you should put yourself when you're reading this comic, you should put yourself in the time that when these books are written.
Yes.
And that's the same thing. I mean, I've given this little mini speech mm-hmm. for people who like have read Dune or watched the new Dune movie. You know, it's like, you have to remember when those books were written, almost every part of that book was groundbreaking, like totally shocking, groundbreaking. You know, this author came up with an entire world all on his own.
Yeah.
An entire like, I mean, Frank Herbert for Dune, he wrote like weather patterns and like, I mean, really, really, really got into a totally different world. And Elric did the same thing. So Michael Moorcock, when he was writing this, this was before Dungeons and Dragons. You know, this was before, I don't want to say before Lord of the Rings because it was after Lord of the Rings, but before the Lord of the Rings movie, before Game of Thrones. you know, before Forgotten Realms, sure, before any of this modern.
And I mean, we were talking about Doom. Doom came out in 65, first edition. So even that's even later. Yeah, like Elric came out like 61. That was pretty like, hey, here's this fantasy thing.
Yes.
I think the only thing that was maybe popular around that time was Lord of the Rings, probably.
Yeah, I mean, Tolkien. Before, and Elric to me kind of reminds me of like a dark elf.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah, he's very much a drow.
Yeah.
His drow energy.
So before drow, before dark elves, before anything that you would
D&D was in 74.
Together.
So like,
people
were, he was really setting that pioneer of like, what can we do? And like Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and that's why this story is still popping up nowadays.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you need to recognize sort of the early beginnings and the power of this story.
Yeah.
And it's really connected with a lot of readers. So Elric, I mean, his comic and the novel might not be like
the most groundbreaking,
like
twists and turns of like, oh, I never
nowadays,
seen this coming. Yeah.
But at that time, sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
It was very much so.
And I don't think we mentioned this when we were talking in the beginning here, but so this box set collects the volume one, The Ruby Throne, volume two, Stormbringer, volume three, White Wolf, and for The Dreaming City. And these graphic novels that we're talking about in this box set, I would say they're, I think, 56 to 60 pages a piece.
Yeah, that's probably about right.
So
they're like, easy reads.
Yep, they're very easy reads. You could probably knock them out maybe an hour or so, just depending on, you know, what you're doing. But I would say, and these are oversized, like a magazine size, I would say. And they're just easy, nice to hold in your lap or on the couch or just take up and go somewhere with it. They don't have a dust jacket, but the art's like on the board. And they're so pretty to look at. And they came with like little art cards with the cover on them.
Yeah, I mean, they actually thought about like, how are we going to collect this entire edition? Because like we said, I think they're going to continue collecting box set after box set.
Sure. The more they start remastering like the ideas.
The old ones too. Sure. Because there were some comics in the
70s, 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Roy Thomas or something.
P. Craig Russell was on it. There's actually some notable. And then they had like crossover with like Conan a little bit. So
that was kind of when they were experimenting with like, what other genres can we just tap into?
Oh, right. Because I mean, okay, you have this drow necromancer with a notable sword. What can we do with it?
So let's talk about that sword. So at the end of the book, his love interest gets stolen away. We're just going to leave it very vague.
Yeah.
And he calls upon the power of his ancient gods, the Lords of Chaos. And the Lords of Chaos are sort of like Hellraiser, sort of like,
yes,
like you need to pay us in blood and then we will help you.
Pay us in blood and sacrifice.
Yes. Yep. So you have to come up with what is worthy of your ask. And usually they said the big thing too is that all the past kings have asked for vengeance or I want to,
dominate this,
capture people or dominate them. And Elric calls upon the Lords of Chaos because he's lost his love.
Yes. She got taken away.
She got taken. So that was a first. And so they were like, you're calling us because you were spurned and your heart was broken.
Yeah.
You know, where other people, like, they wanted to punish their enemies.
Yeah.
Which is
very
what you would
uncharacteristic
call,
of.
Yeah. You're
else.
Like, you call Lord of Chaos to punish your enemies. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So they come up with a way to have Elric sort of become like their angel of death.
Yes, absolutely. Yes,
if you want to put it that way.
Yeah,
right?
Their emissary.
Yeah. So they give him this black sword, and the sword sucks souls. So a lot of
just your typical fantasy weapon. sucks souls.
So I'm gonna say the artwork in this, I did not like the sword. I thought the sword looked like very anime, very.
A little bit, I guess, kind of harkens back to like maybe a berserk, like Guts' sword is berserk. It's a big, great sword.
It's like super thick. The sword itself is super thick and the handle is very thin.
Sure.
But that's
it's
very. That was the original, like, artwork, Andrew's looking at like the concept art,
mm-hmm.
but the one that they settled on was almost looks like magic, like magic's sword. See, look at this picture here.
Oh, it's like, yeah, I would say, yeah. So it's like a great sword, but it's like black and,
it's like a tiny handle and then the blade is super wide. And
absolutely.
Super thick.
So, I mean, yes, maybe it could have been better. but I mean, sure. But you know, for somebody who's a new reader or has some experience in that, I don't mind it. It's fine. And also like the sword is, it talks, right? It communicates with them mentally.
Yeah.
And you find out more and more about the sword and the ties to
sword that sentient.
So he develops this really interesting relationship with that, with his weapon.
Because his sword wants souls, and he doesn't want to give
and
them.
Unlocking more about his world that he's not privy to, and all these layers that Moorcock just kind of just said, oh, okay, and we'll add this, and within this. So now you're comfortable with the rules of the world. All right, now we're going to add another layer on. Just so you kind of, you're always learning something more about what's going on.
Yeah, he does a good job of that. You know,
and I guess I appreciated about reading the series, or this new adapted versions of the series, that was very new for reader friendly. So I didn't know anything about Elric going in. Just from the cover art. So I was like, okay, sometimes when you don't know certain things about a world, or sometimes when fantasy books, you read them, they just go way over your head, or they get too dense or things like that. This was just enough where you know what's going on, but you're not overwhelmed.
Well, that's a good point. Like, you got the idea that this is a totally different world. You got the idea that this is a totally different culture, and you got the idea that there's, you know, torture and mayhem and mm-hmm. all that stuff. But at the same time, every once in a while, it's kind of like in any fantasy, a really convoluted name shows up.
Yeah.
You know, like Synthrill or whatever. You just sort of
roll with it,
gloss over it, and try to remember how it's spelled.
Sure.
But it does actually, you're right. I mean, it does, with the space it's given, because it's not a very thick comic.
No.
The space it's given, and the
it's like 200
bubbles,
pages. Yeah.
Yeah. It has to explain things in a very, very distilled
down.
Accent.
Yeah. So that was, this was a really cool book, just a kind of a great palate cleanser after reading a bunch of Marvel, DC, crime, noir, things like that. We haven't did a ton of fantasy on the podcast. So this was really cool just to kind of put your mind, your reading sensibilities into a different headspace. And just like, okay. And we already play on our own. We already play like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that. So it already fills that passion that we have as well. This was, you know, very mature. I didn't see some of the mature themes or just how much like violence there was in the first couple issues or the first couple of novels. You're like, oh, that's a lot. Okay. And then some of it's like kind of distills down and you just some lore building and things like that. And the only thing, I guess, after reading this, the 4-volume series, was like, I wanted more. I just wanted to know more about the world, more about the characters, some more background, which, you know, if they do continue to do more of these novels and stuff or do some more adaptations, it's limitless what you could do with the series. You know, I think Moorcock's still around, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's still writing some short stories.
And yeah, he's 83. So as long as he's like, hey, you have my blessing, here you go. And I'm sure he has like instructions and things and people to help, you know, steward that legacy for him and stuff. And, you know, I'm really interested to see, you know, this was kind of like our start of our fantasy stories and things like that. How can we still keep a unique world and keep building on it?
I mean, awesome. The biggest thing, even when you look in the back of the books too, and it shows like the old Elric novel covers,
the classics,
it was always Elric and his black sword. That's the biggest deal in this whole story, is that Elric has a cursed sword.
Sure.
And that he's cursed himself because he sort of tried to shed his generational, you know, hatred. He was the one who finally broke that tie, you know. It's like he's thousands of generations of a Nazi. And then he was like, no, I'm not doing that. Yeah. You know, it's like nah. He finally said, no, not doing that. Well, right. Just when he was trying to get out, then he gets this cursed sword. So it's to me, it reads like a vampire where he's yeah. like, I don't want to be a vampire, but I need to, you know, suck blood to stay alive. Yeah,
so it's always that necromancer this, feel like, hey, yeah. You know, this was a great gig for a time, and I don't really need to do that anymore. Yeah. It's not really for me.
Like, I don't want to continue this life, but I'm cursed to continue this
right.
life.
He and wanted. He was thinking is. More about the people of his kingdom and trying to prove their way of life.
Well,
the,
or just yeah, be reunited with his love. Yeah. So then the only, you know, power he could call upon was the Lords of Chaos. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, by their namesake, they're going to somehow, you know, fool you into being trapped in their
right
their game. Right?
Yes.
So I think it's a very well done story. In fact, it almost makes me want to go back into reading just the Michael Moorcock novels to sure. just see how they've aged and how they
yeah kind of I want to pick up more of, like, if I ever seen like the classic comics, I would love to check those out, see what the art's like, what was the mindset back in the day.
Yeah, they almost series. Have like an ElfQuest look to me.
Yeah, like I sure like that. See
like
that.
An old school drawings, not so much like the computerized. Like right now, the comic is a lot of digital art.
Sure,
you know,
the concept's really cool though. They have a bit of everything. Like their ships are really cool. I love the way they design dragons.
Yep, you could dragons. Say. Even the Ariok, the main god that appears.
Yep.
He appears as like a boy.
Yeah, that was super unique. I was like, okay, that's kind of different.
Kind of reminds me. I mean, maybe he's like a young god. I don't know, but it is funny that it's like he has this. Maybe they had him appear as a god because he has a really short temper. And he like gets his feelings hurt and mm-hmm. then he like lashes out. So it's like a god that has not established their emotions yet. It's very
right?
weird.
Yeah. Or, yeah. So that was, yeah, it's just, it was super unique look at a different fantasy series. And we're always broadening our horizons into, you know, what's coming out, what's available and what's around there. So this was really cool. And I think Titan Comics really put out a great series. I guess, what was your favorite volume to read from the series since you read it recently?
Yeah, I think it kind of picked up a good speed after volume one.
Okay.
Like volume one kind of laid all the, you know,
the ground building.
I mean, sometimes volume one's world the building, best, yeah. but like I think for this one, it just sort of said, this is the world you're in.
Sure.
But like volume three, Elric kind of started getting some companions.
Yeah, I kind of liked volume three. Yeah. Kind of like, hey, here's the Stark Edge Lord.
Me too.
It's like a swashbuckler.
And by then, he was totally dialogue. Established as his own character.
Yeah.
You realize that he had a quest that he wanted to finish and that there's a cost he needs to pay.
Yes.
And it was a really good hump in the novel.
So kind of breaks it up a bit before you kind of go to the race to the finish line.
Yeah. And the race to the finish too, like you said, it kind of left you wondering where is this going after? Like it didn't tie it up into a perfect little bow.
No.
It was just like, this is how we're ending this part of the story. Mm-hmm. And even then when it ended, I think it said the end of part one.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, okay. That's mm-hmm. interesting.
Right. So yeah, hopefully they come back and continue the series. I would like to see more.
Well, I would think it was popular enough. I mean, we're part of a lot of groups and a lot of like chats and Facebook pages and things. And a lot of people have given a ton of praise for this, let alone, you know, Alan Moore and everyone else who wrote a ton of praise. So it's really,
yeah,
really
I think what was it? Ron Lim was on the back or on the box set. He's like, Ron Mars. Yeah.
Yes.
Ron Mars was like, oh, this is a pretty good book. You should check this out.
Yeah. And the Geek Syndicate. I mean, there's just a lot of places that really put in their two cents of saying, I enjoyed this. This was great.
Yeah. Really,
Ron
really
Mars cool. from what Silver Surfer?
Surfer and yeah. Green Lantern and things like that.
Yeah.
Really cool stuff. And yeah, I think, yeah, Titan Comics put out a great book, great adaptation. Hopefully they continue it. We'll hopefully revisit some more. This has been another great look at Michael Moorcock's Elric series. This is Andrew Bonner.
and Chris Ramos.
Signing off.